Podcasting 2.0 for September 6, 2024, episode 192, Lunchroom Quickie. Well, hello, everybody. Hello, boardroom. Welcome to Podcasting 2.0, your weekly board meeting where all things podcasting are discussed. You want to know what's really going on? You want to tune into this one. If you're a nerd, you're in luck. We are the only boardroom that meets during board member vacations. I'm Adam Curry, here in the cruise ship capital of Mexico, just north of Puerto Vallarta. And in Alabama, the man behind the new BlackBerry takedown list. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave Jones.
I find that cashews, this bowl of cashews here, if you can hear it.
Yes, I hear your cashews. Your cashews.
It's like a quick trail mix to go along with the beef shake, and it's like cashews and raisins, you know.
Why don't you just mix it all into one so you can have the cashews ground right into your beef shake?
No. See, the cashews are soft, so I can chew them, and mostly don't hear me.
But you might have a new product if you could do that. It might be something that could be marketable. Hey, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm always thinking.
It's like Bill Maher said about like young people thinking that communism is great,
or all these new socialism. I don't know if they think communism, yeah. Socialism, probably.
Some do, comrade. But I mean, like that he said, you know, just because an idea is new doesn't mean it's great. You can what was this thing he said? You can cook in the bathroom and shit in the kitchen. It's a new idea, but that doesn't mean it's a good one.
I haven't listened to a Bill Maher podcast in a while, to be honest.
He got on a string of stuff I wasn't interested in, so I kind of fell out of my rotation.
Oh yeah, that happens.
He's on the floor.
I'm here in Mexico in the hotel room, and
Mexico.
Yes, I'm always amazed. We're on vacation, quotes, air quotes, vacation. Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed that it kind of works. And this is the new rig. This is the new machine that you recommended I get.
Which is?
Oh, it's the Lenovo ThinkPad.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great. Now, here's what happened yesterday, though. I'm a little concerned.
Wait, by the way, I'm sorry I could not make it to your surprise party. I was invited.
I know you were.
I could not make it because Melissa was out of town that same weekend. So there would be nobody to stay with my daughter.
It's more than okay.
I tried, man.
I know you did. Tina's like, Dave really tried. Dvorak didn't even answer the email invite. I said, yeah, that makes sense. There's the difference in my podcast partners. I got to tell you, man, I was blown away. I was surprised. There were people from all over the country who came in for it. On Labor Day weekend, no less, on Friday.
My plan was to do the show.
And then hop on a plane.
And then hop on a plane immediately and try to get there. I couldn't find anything that was going to work, so I was trying to figure out how to do it halfway from a hotel room. It was on the same day as the show, so if I'd have missed the show,
yeah, I would
have tipped you off.
Yeah, something. It was for those who don't know, my wife threw me a surprise party for my 60th birthday, and literally invited 60 people from all over the country, and they came.
I didn't know she invited 60 people. Like that was the magic. That's funny.
Yeah, that's it funny. Was, yeah. So that's it was. Cute. It was good. It was really good.
Anyway, what were you saying?
So I set everything up here. Now I'd already tested out the rig at home, of course, you know, which always involves an interesting combination of USB hubs and figuring out which port to put stuff in. There was a little moment of fear as for some reason, one of the Rodecaster Duo ports didn't come up. I'm like, oh God. And then, so I figured it out. Then I get here and I set it all up again and I notice, for some reason we're doing Currying the Keeper on Wednesday evening and the Hindenburg recording failed. And so of course I have the Rodecaster running as backup. So I'm like, okay, that's no problem. So I'll just pull it off the Rodecaster. And, what I had not yet installed was the Rodecaster Central software that you need to put it into transfer mode.
So I got the new machine.
Yeah. So I got that.
Okay.
And then it said, You can't transfer any files until you upgrade your Rodecaster Duo.
Oh, no, with firmware?
Yeah, this is, and you never want to do that. Oh, no. Never want to do that. And so it works. I'm able to get the recording. But then the next day, I noticed that the second USB audio device on the Rodecaster, if it wasn't receiving any audio, it would just disconnect. And of course, I use that for everything. So let me just check and make sure it's working here. Let me see. It is. And so I was really worried during No Agenda yesterday, but I guess if it's receiving sound up until a certain, you know, I don't know if there's a timeout. I had Darren O'Neill making me go into my control panel and turning off the Windows. Man, those guys suck. So, yeah, you used to just be able to go into this other panel and you say, okay, don't power down USB ports to save energy.
And was that the issue?
Well, I thought so. And so that's no longer there. You have to now go into control panel, go into find the root hub.
Yeah, the device manager.
In device manager, yeah. And of course, these things are checked by default, which makes no sense.
Yeah, what? Because, you know, everybody wants, everybody's, what's killing the planet is everybody's USB ports.
Yeah,
that's the one. That's,
exactly. And so I click those both off and we do the show. It's fine. And then maybe 15 minutes later, after we're done with the show, the USB port had shut down again. So I'm like, oh man, is there some timer on it? The thing that really changed, of course, is the Rodecaster. So I don't know. And if you go search for USB problems with Rodecaster, that's an ugly search because it's everywhere. It's like there's all kinds of, and I think it's just a function of USB by itself. I don't know. So
you're on the Duo right now.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Based on my experience and the experience that I've heard through the grapevine of other people, the Duo is kind of a fragile product.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's bad or people shouldn't get it, but it seems fragile.
Well, you know, these things are hard to make, and particularly if you're going to try. I mean, I tried it. If you're going to try and make it work with all different kinds of USB devices, and of course, they have two USB devices, which actually have three different. You know, there's one virtual device, which is the chat, which is what, you know, is the built-in mix minus. Anyway, I decided before we started this show, I just reboot the Rodecaster. Maybe that'll make a difference. And so far, so good. So let me just double check again. You know, I just have to hit that ding every 10 minutes. It's kind of like a dead man switch on a train. Yeah. If I don't hit that thing, if I don't hit that thing, it shuts down.
Well, I mean, I think we get lulled into based on how we grew up. We grew up with hardware that was we grew up with hardware that had its logic was arranged as a series of tubes or chips, or the hardware itself was doing the logic, but it's not like that anymore. Nowadays, it's the logic is buried in software, which is running in a general purpose chip.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or many general purpose chips on the board.
Yeah.
So, but we still look at this piece of hardware and we think about it as if it's something.
Oops, sorry, you know, a little loud there.
As if it's the way things used to be.
Right.
Well, so it's kind of confusing that you're like, why does rebooting my mix board. but because it's not really a mixing board. What it is a computer with a screen and some levers on, you know, some sliders on.
Yeah.
It.
No, that's true. And also
it's Linux.
And then there's another problem which we've run into as we've been testing stuff, you know, been working together for 15 years, building all kinds of projects. You get used to, as an old school computer user who comes from that world, you get used to workarounds, and then you just use that workaround, and you're so used to using the workaround that, you know, things are fixed or have been updated or improved, and like, oh, what? I don't have to do these 15 steps anymore. I can just hit this one button and it works because I just get used to it, you know, because that's my from the Sinclair ZX80, you know, from those days. There were a lot of workarounds you had to play with on the Sinclair.
Oh man, one of my favorite episodes of John Chidji's Causality Show podcast is where he goes over this radiation machine that was X-ray machine, some sort of imaging machine that ended up giving people horrible cancer.
Nice.
And the reason was because there was a specific, he gets all into the assembly language code of this machine. And what was happening is there was these bugs in it where it would give the operator of the machine a false message under certain circumstances. And it just became known that you always just hit enter to go through that screen.
Just ignore that.
Ignore that screen. Yeah. But it was literally part of the training is ignore these three screens.
Oh, man.
And 99% of the time when you ignored those screens, it worked exactly the way it was supposed to. But 1% of the time, it would keep the shutter open long enough to give you horrible cancer. Was like, yeah. Yeah, wow. The workaround became, if you ever have to tell somebody to do a workaround, that becomes part of the unwritten documentation of that product. And then if something ever doesn't, but you lose the sense of the fact that that was not the way it was supposed to function to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And we've even had that with the Freedom Controller, if you recall.
Oh, for sure.
There was something I was doing, and you're like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I do it this way. He's like, you can just hit Command L. Oh, really?
Command L. Yeah.
For link.
To be honest, the Freedom Controller is mostly that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
one of these days I'm going to rewrite that thing from scratch and it's going to with modern things and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, maybe that'll be our retirement.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm not too bullish. 80, I'm not too bullish. Hey, I use it every single day. It's a part of my life. So I love the Freedom Controller. And by the way, that's some software, man. I mean, I don't even have the login anymore. I don't think you have that running on a server somewhere. And from time to time, you know, you'll go in and look and it's been uptime 700 days or something. It's just, it's a beast.
I have not after the show, I'm going to log in and see what the uptime is on that machine of yours. Yeah. I bet you it's years.
It's 5 years. Rock solid, my brother. That's the Dave Jones experience right there. It does not go down. So just before I started getting everything set up, you know, I saw this and this just, it made me sad at the same time, made me very happy because of this project that you and I started for this very reason. Is it 4 years now? We've been doing this for 4 years. Is it 4 years?
Started in August of 2020. Yeah.
So more than 4 years. Wow. There you go.
During the heart of the pandemic, man.
So Todd Cochran, CEO of Blueberry, says it has been the biggest week in a long time of show and episode takedowns at everyone's beloved podcast platform. I'm going to think he's talking about Spotify.
Maybe.
And he says, everything we could review has us asking why. We cannot see everything they've pulled, but one thing is for sure, the political content is the focus. So they are deplatforming episodes and shows. And again, I'm going to presume that it's Spotify, but it could be others.
I think it's clearly Spotify. I want a feed of that so bad. I hope he does this.
That's you proposed the BlackBerry list. It's a great idea.
We call BlackBerry.
Yeah.
I need this list because I want to see like an update in my podcast app of all the weird things that they deplatform and try to, it's like a game. You got to try to figure out why they did it.
It's so asinine. And again, it just proves that all these modern apps that aren't on any Silicon Valley, owned index, they are the literal freedom of speech platforms or apps or whatever you want to call it, systems. Mm. Because your speech is not shuttered. It's crazy. And I don't know. You never really hear anything about it. Except in this particular case, you know, you just don't hear. And I guess Blueberry has to tell their podcasters, hey, this got kicked off of Spotify. I would think they would, at least.
You would feel like that's your duty to tell them because they've been just removed from a major platform, you know, and you're hosting their show. Because if they just come to you and say, hey, this was, where's my show? It's not showing up. Well, then you're like, well, it got taken down and we knew about it, but we didn't tell you. It's almost like a moral, kind of like a moral, you know, or an ethical thing where you feel like you need to.
And, you know, people.
It's funny that I don't hear anybody else. None of the other hosting companies mention this, but it has to be happening
everywhere. It must be happening to everybody. Yeah. And I remember when there was a time when there was a couple of people had tried putting No Agenda episodes up on YouTube and, you know, just the audio. And I think one guy at some point was actually doing chapter images and, you know, making quite a production of it. And one by one, these people would finally email me and say, you know, I got three strikes now on your No Agenda episode. So I have to stop because it's ruining my account. Yeah,
so, was that like the NA Clips guy? Remember that? Where he would do like a little short, like
no, he was one he was doing hits no, or whatever. This is full episodes, which I was fine with. You know, hey, if you want to maintain that, I don't care. You go ahead. You as long as you don't enable monetization, and and one by one, these would get taken down. And for what? I mean, we're just two old dudes. What are we doing? And you know, Tina got put in Instagram jail.
Instagram jail? I didn't even know there was an Instagram jail.
Yeah, she got put in Instagram comment jail. So she of course, okay. This is my wife. So she you know, of course, posted stuff about the party. And then she says, oh, I can't comment even on my own posts. So what do you mean? Well, they're saying you have a timeout. You can't post comments for a week. I said, what did you do? She says, I don't know.
Yeah, what did she
do? No, they won't tell
they
you.
They will never tell you. They will never tell you.
That's the crazy thing. It's like, well, what is it? I said, you must have hurt somebody's feelings. It's Instagram. Yeah, I don't know. Somebody reported you, I guess. I don't know what it is. It's crazy.
I would like to hear from... That shows you, okay, that right there shows you the difference. It just kind of dawned on me. That shows you the difference between podcasting and every other thing.
Yeah.
Is you got muted on Instagram and so you can't post there and that's just it. You're done. You're toast.
Yeah.
With podcasting, you got removed off Spotify. Did anybody even notice?
Right. That's a good point.
Because you still show up in 47 other podcast apps.
Exactly. But eventually.
And on your own website, you know.
Eventually people will figure it out. Like, you know, maybe I should be promoting different apps for people to listen to my show on, you know?
Like what? What do you mean?
Well, if people, you know, you don't want people getting used to listening to you on Spotify and then all of a sudden one day gone. Yeah. You know, or anywhere that's controlled by anyone else but you and your feed. I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of what we've done here, which is good.
Melissa sent me an episode of a podcast the other day of that she wanted me to listen to, and I was like, yeah, send it to me. And so she texted it to me, and it was a Spotify link, and I was like, oh,
oh, I get those.
Oh, what are you doing?
I don't even click on those anymore. If someone sends me a link to a podcast on Spotify, I'm like, I just don't answer. I'm like, I'm not clicking on that. And
I'm like, this hurts me. It hurts my heart. You know,
especially from your wife, man. What's wrong with her?
I know. I was personally offended.
So she's using Spotify to listen to podcasts, and she's married to the Pod Sage.
I know. I had to go check her CO2 monitor to make sure the room wasn't too hot. Too hot.
And, you know, Tina's on Fountain. She's been on Fountain forever. She likes it, so she's good. Yeah, but she was listening on, I think, probably on Apple previous to that.
I got work to do, man.
While we're on it, I want to remind everybody: if you're having an issue with an app, getting it into the app store, because I got another one of these emails. There's been two this month so far, or the two in the past 2 weeks, where the app store
kicks the second one.
Yeah, the app store kicks it back. IndieHub, the app store kicks it back and says, you need permission to access this content, which I do not understand why. There's some bug in their QA process that says, oh, you know, if it's this kind of an app accessing other content, and it, you know, clearly the QA process doesn't include if it's RSS, if equals RSS, then approve. So I have a boilerplate email. If you need it, if you run into those problems, let us know, because I think we've had 100% success rate when I send that email. Yeah. And we have a link to our, you know, to all of our legal documents and all that stuff. It's a pro email. It always gets approved so far.
You'll just sail right through.
Yeah.
That I think they have a little wheel when they do approval that they just spin it and they say, okay, what are we going to ding you on? And it's because 10 podcast apps can submit that use the index, you know, 4 of them will get dinged in this way and 6 of them will just have no issue. I don't understand. It can't be all of them because we've only needed to do this for maybe 3 or 4.
Yeah. It's like, all right, everybody, here's another submission. And oops, that's not the one. Oh man, that's not what I wanted to do. Ah,
no, oh, you screwed it up.
I did.
Check your CO2 monitor.
I did.
Check your CO2 monitor.
Okay. Maybe. There we go, everybody. Let's see. Do we want to approve this app or not? Round and round it goes. Let's see. Like they're accessing other people's content. No, I don't think we can do that. Computer says no.
Bombshell.
Yeah. I finally got there.
You got there. It was worth it. wait, what am I doing?
So my
phone automatically Bluetoothed over to the Rodecaster.
Oh,
I
cool.
I had that
on. Oh, that's interesting.
All of a sudden something started playing. I was like, what is this? Mm. Oh, by the way, I wonder if I can pull this up. Actually, this is kind of convenient because...
are you going to play something from your phone? Oh, this will go well.
Can you hear this first of all?
No,
because can you hear that?
No, because you're not connecting with the chat interface. I can hear it softly in the background. Can you turn it up? Maybe it's just there. You go.
You can hear that?
Yeah.
That I had the pleasure of introducing these guys with their debut video.
This was
Lifetime. I don't know how they're doing it either, Todd, and how Spreaker thinks they can.
I wasn't prepared for it, but I was listening to.
Sounds like me.
It is you.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to. This is the old bootleg from the bootleg dance party episode from the Dave's Not Here dance party.
the 3-hour episode.
Yeah, from March of 2023. Uh-huh. So I was testing the new Overcast, mm-hmm. and it just it was in my upload. So I'm like, I'll listen to that. I hadn't listened to it for a while, and it sounds like during the whole episode, it sounds like your mouth is swollen, or some
really.
Yeah, you're talking like this, and I never noticed that. I wonder if that was during your dental.
I was just about to say it probably was. It probably was during my dental escapades.
Yeah, something was definitely not right with your voice. You were sure.
Well, thanks. I feel better now.
Sorry about that.
Now that I have a bootleg out there that sucks.
that's a classic. That's the bootleg from recording that nobody will ever have a copy of.
So this week, an episode of our favorite Hate Listen came out. Which, mm-hmm. it was so, now I'm going to say something that may sound unkind, but it's not meant that way.
Please.
So there's a couple of podcasts I listen to religiously. Pod News Daily, every single day I listen to it. I don't think I ever skip one. And I realize that it's kind of like, and I also... I think every day I will take a look at CNBC, around 8:30, my time, which is when the markets open. Because I have the YouTube TV, I'll just pop it up and take a look what they're saying. And so on CNBC, it's always the same thing. If the market's up, time to buy. If the market's down, time to buy.
Buy the dip.
It's always the same. And I realize that the Pod News is kind of a bit like that. It's always up. It's always good. It's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of stats and numbers and revenues are up. Profits are up. Number of podcasts are up. More people are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, to be fair, is very, it's very positive. Puts me in a good mood about podcasting. But then you get, one of the top podcasts by output, probably, production units, that being NPR, and the reality is different. And I'm glad that you clipped it. I see you have 8 clips, so I don't know exactly what you...
I brought a PowerPoint.
Yeah. But I think we should talk about this, because this seemed to me, there's a lot of interesting things in here. Because it was only, a 15-minute episode, if that?
11 minutes.
Yeah. It seemed like this was probably a fair representation of the state of the podcast industrial complex as it is today.
There's a lot packed into 11 minutes of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, whoa, we're going to have to go back and deconstruct a little bit of this. It's interesting from a lot of different perspectives, not just from the, you know, not just of the industry, but on sort of the internal workings of a show like that itself too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the state of public radio and all of these things. But the first, like before we kind of get into it, I want your opinion of the first clip. I want your opinion if this is a pre-roll ad. I want your opinion if this is AI voice or not.
Okay, here we go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is.
Well, first of all, why am I hearing this hiss?
Hiss?
I'm hearing hiss in that clip. Let me say that again.
What? This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is.
Well, that almost sounds like room noise. It sounds like room noise.
It wasn't, though. I pulled it directly out of the MP3. I just chopped it up with Audacity.
Then I'm going to say that's not AI. That was and I think I kind of recognized the voice. I don't think that was AI. I don't think they can do that. They would hate themselves so much. And that's the only thing they have to do over there is talk. Are they going to replace that with computers? I don't think so.
But supposedly these are, based on what they say during the show, these are like piped in.
Really?
This is piped in, you know, copy. So they don't, I don't think they read this in-house with one of their people. So they just got this from the advertiser, I guess.
Let me listen to it again. Let me see.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Now that does sound kind of fake.
What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast?
Yeah, you know, if I was producing this, I'd say, you've got to reread that. Because this is, listen to how this reads.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
I'd be like, please, let's do it again. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. That's what I would suggest. And now here's the next piece.
What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast?
I'd say, let's do that again. What if comparing insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? And there's no inflection here.
With Progressive, it is.
Yeah, no.
It is.
Yeah, it would be.
That sounds AI to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. But whatever's going on, there's some kind of hiss or room noise in there that should not be in there.
Huh. That's interesting, number one. So, like, this whole episode is about them. Supposedly, it's about them switching to how to host red ads. So that's what this is about.
Well, there's a lot going on in that episode. Like, hey, you know, yeah. The part that I liked was advertisements, or what we call sponsorships. Oh, okay. So, yeah. All right, there you go. It's advertising, yes.
And so, just based on that ad, that pre-roll, maybe it's not that you weren't doing host red ads. Maybe part of it is that your ads that you're piping in suck.
Well, I would have rejected like, if I was the client or if I was the agency, I would have rejected that. I said, you need to reread that. That's not exciting. It's dull. It's boring. There's no inflection. So whether it's AI or not, I would have rejected it.
And pre-roll number two on that episode was a house ad for Radiolab. So that's not encouraging.
Right.
That they can't fill slot two.
Radiolab.
Yeah.
Radiolab.
like that.
That would have been a better, they should clip that out of this show. That would have been a better ad. Yes.
Sorry.
But like, okay. So, but clip two is, he's talking about, we're going to, you know, they're going to do host read ads now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a conversation, you and me, about something that we're doing at the show that's kind of big.
Yeah, it is big. And that.
Wow, Dave, I'm hearing that same room noise in these clips.
It's not my stuff. No,
I'm inclined to believe you at all times. Well, I'll get over it.
It's a Rodecaster duo.
I don't think so.
I'll
listen through it.
We're going to have a conversation, you and me, about something that we're doing at the show that's kind of big.
Yeah, it is big. And that decision is for us hosts to start reading some of the ads that listeners will hear on the podcast, not on terrestrial radio. Of course, that's got different rules. Now, we haven't read the ads on the podcast until now, and there's a really good, if obvious, reason why we're about to.
Okay, hold on a second. This is bugging me. it really is.
I don't know what that could be. Let me listen to it on my side and see what it sounds like.
Let me see if I can pull out that episode in Podverse. That's really bugging me. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I get it on my copy too.
Hmm.
Of the clip. So it's not something coming from your side.
Let me just see.
Let me go to Podcast Index.
On the media. Hold on, here it is. Latest episode. Let me just play it from here.
Okay.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I hear it already.
Welcome to the Midweek on the Media podcast. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
Wow.
And I'm
Mike. What are they recording? Where are they recording this? That doesn't even sound like a studio. Listen to that.
Hey, Brooke.
Hi, Micah.
For this week's podcast...
Wow, they're recording that at their desk or something?
They got together in the lunchroom for a quickie.
ISO that, please.
I don't know. I don't know what that... I mean, like, that's not their typical...
No, that's not their typical...
Oh, Eric PP said maybe it's over Zoom. Maybe they did a Zoom call.
Oh, man. That's really bad. Well, anyway, let's listen to it again. And we'll just try and forget the... horrible. You know what? No wonder no one wants to advertise on that show. It sounds like crap.
We're going to have
a
conversation.
Well, they fired the audio guy.
That's the
last round of layoffs.
All right, you guys, here's a pod mic. Everybody, you can do it. Good luck. It'll be great. Don't worry. You can do this. Podcasters all over the world do this. You guys can too.
We're going to have a conversation, you and me, about something that we're doing at the show that's kind of big.
Yeah, it is big. And that decision is for us hosts to start reading some of the ads that listeners will hear on the podcast, not on terrestrial radio. Of course, that's got different rules. Now, we haven't read the ads on the podcast until now, and there's a really good, if obvious, reason why we're about to.
Wow.
That's really
surprising.
So the question is why?
Because
there's a really good reason.
Because advertisers aren't getting enough return on investment from dynamic ad insertions, is my guess.
Yeah, the first part of the answer is sort of a hand wave. He says, you know, he's like, you know, we, you know, blah blah blah, DAI, and then. But the second part is where all the action is, and that's clip three.
Recently, some outlets like Current and CNN have reported that this month, in mid-September, our producing station, WNYC, plans to cut at least 8% of our workforce.
And again?
Again, yes. And this is after a substantial round of cuts this time last year.
Last year, we lost a producer. So did some of our other shows. And we lost friends around the station, too. They're gone now.
They're gone. Vaporized.
Yeah, the audio guy was the first guy
yes,
to go.
Yes, it's obvious. I think you're spot on with that. They fired the actual, they say producer, but it's really the guy who set him up and does the engineering. This is very disappointing from NPR.
Now they're just telling each other. Mike is telling Brooke, "Hey, Brooke, just turn up your Yeti Blue. Just turn it a little bit higher.
Yeti Blue.
Give me some more game.
That's it. Yeah. Yeti Blue. Yeah. Why did she laugh? That's a very good point, Cotton Gin. These are worth analyzing. I'm going to pick apart every single breath and sentence in this.
Recently, some outlets like Current and CNN have reported that this month, in mid-September, our producing station, WNYC, plans to cut at least 8% of our workforce.
Well, this is okay. So this is interesting. Instead of saying, you know, here at NPR, we've made decisions. No, they're saying other news outlets are reporting that we are going to cut our staff.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That's an interesting way of announcing this news. Let's listen to the next
part. I don't know how to take that either, because it was they're talking about themselves in the third person.
As if
they themselves are not part of this of their own lives or something. It's weird.
Or how about this? Maybe they didn't know about it. They heard it from CNN and Current. Why I don't know why they mentioned Current. And they're pissed that they had to hear it from other sources.
Oh, and so maybe that's why they got it. Maybe that's why they did the lunchroom quickie. It's because they were, this is sort of a, you know,
it's rogue. They're going rogue. They're going rogue. Yes, it's rogue. That's why it was only an 11-minute episode. It's rogue. Let's go. Let's show these guys what this is horrible. I can't believe they're doing that. And it's all over the place. Everyone's talking about it. Let's do an episode and let's be critical of them.
Again. Yes. And this is after.
Again. That's not very funny, Brooke. She's laughing. Again.
There's a lot of unexplained chuckling in this that I don't understand.
It's horrible when people get fired and you have to downsize. It's not a laughing matter, although she still has a job. Maybe that's why she's laughing. I'm still here.
Again, yes. And this is after a substantial round of cuts this time last year.
Last year, we lost a producer. So did some of our other shows. And we lost friends around the station, too. They're gone now.
Wow. So are they no longer friends when you don't work with them, Brooke? They're gone now. I don't talk to them anymore. I've removed them from my speed dial.
So the chop and drop is in full effect.
Yeah.
At NYC and NPR in general. I mean, and this, the reason for the chop and drop, he's going to go into a brilliant economic analysis here.
I'm not going to pretend to be some,
sorry.
No, go
ahead. Oh, I was going to add to that. that we should probably mention that, you know, that, a year ago, I mean, NPR overhired in their podcast division because of the incredible hyped up market that existed on the, you know, the tail end of the pandemic. And of course it was a great time for podcasting. It was, everyone was either listening to a podcast or making a podcast and supposedly doing both. And they just overhired thinking this is it, you know, it's going to keep on rolling. So that,
well, I've been saying this for a while, is that the bizarre thing about NPR and these public radio shows is that they still show up in the top of all the charts, yet they've like essentially fired most of their staff. They're showing up in the top of the charts, but they're not making any money.
Yeah, that's troubling.
I'm not going to pretend to be some ad expert, but the economy is funky, and for all kinds of reasons, companies are spending less money on advertising, and that has really hurt WNYC.
Hold on. The economy is funky.
Yes, this is the economic analysis. Number one, the economy is funky.
It's funky.
And also all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
those are your two.
You mean like companies aren't making money. People are having a hard time making ends meet. prices are through the roof, and advertised. Yes. There's been a pullback in advertising, although you wouldn't know it.
Those are the reasons.
These are reasons. Yes.
I'm not going to pretend to be some ad expert, but the economy is funky, and for all kinds of reasons, companies are spending less money on advertising, and that has really hurt WNYC. I know it's hurt all kinds of media, but it's really had an outsized effect on the podcast industry. Like we mentioned, there were layoffs over here last year. At the time, our president, LaFontaine Oliver, cited a decline in advertising, what we call sponsorship. We saw that at other companies like Pushkin Industries, which is Malcolm Gladwell's podcast company. They cut like a third of their staff. LAist, which was formerly known as KPCC, got rid of some of their podcast only shows. NPR cut over 100 jobs. So kind of everyone's feeling it, but we're all feeling it, I think, especially rough.
All these shows he mentions, they all have
too many people.
They all have one thing in common. They are way overstaffed and overproduced for what they are.
Yeah.
They have too much overhead, and it's not sustainable. The change, I'll jump to the end real quick just to say that I think the real change that's going on here, Harv has it. At least they have a joy department.
Yes, they do.
maybe that's why they're laughing, because they're full of joy.
Hey, but good news, you're fired. Good news, your joys are.
the change is not from, is not Host Red. The real change they're talking about is not Host Red versus automatic insertion.
Yeah, it's the real downsizing.
The real change here is pre-roll versus mid-roll. That's what they're going to be changing. That's what's coming. They're going to start putting the ads in the show. On the media always has a pre-roll and a post-roll. They don't interrupt the show midway through.
Yes, because that goes against
what's going to happen.
That goes against our journalistic ethics.
Yeah, exactly. Which they will talk about that aspect in the middle, but I think that's what they're trying to prep everybody for, and why they did this special episode is because they know that it's going to be jarring when they drop an ad in the middle of the show. Whether it's Host Red or DAI or anything, that's what the real difference. I think that's what they're not saying out loud, is they're going to start sticking ads
in the middle,
in line, essentially, maybe even native ads. We don't know.
Ooh. That would be bad.
I think I have an idea about one of those, what one of those may be here in a minute. But the one interesting thing is he talks about ad money in relation to what their current situation is versus ad money being sort of the gravy on top of donations, which are the meat.
Oh, it happened.
Oh, the cue. Drop the cue.
No, it happened. The USB crapped out.
No.
Let me see if I
reboot.
Can.
Boot.
No, I have to. I can bring the USB back up. Oh, this sucks. But then I have to essentially restart M Airlist again.
So maybe I can play it from my phone.
No, I'm doing. I got it. I'm already there.
You got it?
Okay. Yeah. Here we go.
I'm gonna eat some nuts.
Here it is.
Right, but as a public radio show, we're not just relying on ad money. It's just an area where we have some potential for growth. I mean, we still have the membership model. That's when listeners like you guys support us. And that still is our most reliable source of funding.
You know, I don't believe that. I think that's a lie. The most reliable source of funding from NPR, I knew the CEO before this one and LaFontaine, and that was Yair Amon, also known as Lee Masters, because he's the guy that hired me at MTV. And he was Lee Masters was his DJ name at WMMR.
It's a great name. It's almost as good as John Holden, but yeah, not quite.
No, I like Lee Masters. Lee Masters. Hey, everybody, it's Lee Masters, WMMR Hit Radio. So he became the CEO, and I met him at some conference a long time ago. I don't even remember where it was. And it was nice just to catch up with him, of course, because we hadn't seen each other for many, many years. And he said, you know, I'm probably going to retire. He actually had some health issues. I think he even had a heart attack after he left. And he says, but I'm working on this endowment. And so they've had these endowments, which are like $100 million endowments. I mean, really, really big stuff. And that's really their main reliable source of funding. Of course, it's fixed, and how much you can spend per year is fixed. The actual, and a lot of people think the government funds them, but the money that goes to NPR from government is like 1.5 or 2% of their overall budget. But to say that it's coming from listeners like you as that's the biggest source, no, that's not true. And I think the ad money incredibly important.
But this is WNYC, though, she's talking about, not NPR, the mothership. So that may... I believed her that direct support from the audience is probably a big part of their stuff.
I still think that it's an NPR station, so I still think that they get a lot of their funding, particularly from the NPR programming through the... That's actually a good point, because NYC is a content producer as well as a station. So maybe it's just, and we're really just talking out of our buttholes here, but maybe it's just the production budget, that they just don't have the budgets anymore. Cause I mean, Fresh Air, yeah. I mean, that's one that gets,
it's GBH, right?
Yeah, I think so. So, wow. All right. Let's hear that one more time.
Right. But as a public radio show, we're not just relying on ad money. It's just an area where we have some potential for growth.
What a lie, Brooke.
I mean, we still have the membership model. That's when listeners like you guys support us. And that still is our most reliable source of funding.
Well, I'm going to say it's reliable.
I disagree with you. No, I disagree with you. I believe her. I think she's, because if we look at Spotify's earnings, that clearly shows that so much of their budget comes from their actual revenue comes from premium subscribers. The ad money cannot support it alone.
Yeah.
Like they cannot, I believe her 100% that she is saying that without the donations, they would be completely toast.
Well, she's saying something else. She's saying reliable. So I would agree that people sign up for monthlies and that it's reliable. But people also, when times get tough, they stop their sustaining donations. So I think it's reliable because it's constant, but it has to be going down.
That's possible. Yeah. And they're trying to boost the advertising so that they can smooth it all out across the board. But clip six is an interesting one because it's obvious this conversation it's meant to sound off the cuff, but it's very scripted. And to me, this is where we kind of get into the meat of things.
Our issue is that a show like On the Media, a show about the news that's deeply edited, that features original reporting, that isn't just like a couple people sitting around a table shooting the breeze. Like, this is an expensive show to make. I think that's why it's really good, is that we have really smart people and we compensate them fairly for...
Hold on a second. We're not just a couple of morons with microphones sitting around a table. You know, we've got professionals doing this work. You know, we have editing. We have in-depth reporting. Well, why don't you use some of that incredible talent to make your sound good?
Our issue is that a show like On the Media, a show about the news that's deeply edited, that features original reporting, that isn't just...
What does deeply edited mean? I'm sorry for interrupting this and picking it apart to this degree, but what does that even mean? It's deeply edited.
Well, We aren't like the other personality-driven show where it's just two people talking. It's not who we are. I mean, he's saying that, like, that's exactly who they are. If you listen to On the Media, that's so funny because they're supposedly about the media. They hardly ever talk about the media. They just they call up somebody from a university and ask them a bunch of questions, and that's the show. It's literally two people talking most of the time.
Yeah, you're right. And by the way, no agenda. In 3.5 hours, twice a week, we play between 70 and 90 clips. And we do it live, so there's no deep editing. But there's real work that goes on there. Anyway, here we go.
They're essentially the same as these other two people talking shows, except their budget is 10 times higher.
Right, exactly. All right. And they like to compensate people fairly.
Yes.
Okay.
Our issue is that a show like On the Media, a show about the news that's deeply edited, that features original reporting, that isn't just like a couple people sitting around a table shooting the breeze. Like, this is an expensive show to make. I think that's why it's really good, is that we have really smart people and we compensate them fairly for putting a great program together. Oh, man. Whereas there's this other big style of show, which is just kind of like the personality driven chat shows. And those, I think, are having a bit of an easier time securing ad money, perhaps because
whoa, that's interesting. So first of all, they have really smart people, not just a couple of dummies who sit around personality driven and just talk, and because of that they're making the money
shows. And those, I think, are having a bit of an easier time securing ad money, perhaps because they're not always talking about the news, and because
just say it, Micah. It's because they're more commercial.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak too generally here.
It's not a bad thing. It's just not what we are.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
This is the best clip. So we're not commercial, and therefore we're surprised that we're not getting commercials. Hello. Yeah. You said it. We're not commercial. Not, first of all, every single podcast talks with two people and a microphone, personalities, is talking about the news. It may be sports news. It may be general news. It may be political news. It may be show business news. The world is news. And how this is tone deaf.
They say, well, maybe those other shows are making more money because they just avoid the news. Have you watched these shows? That's all they talk about.
She says, go ahead, Michael, say it. We're not commercial. What does that mean? I listen to your podcast. I really do.
That Geico, that AI voice Geico commercial at the very beginning, that sounds pretty commercial to me.
Yeah, a bit of an easier time securing ad money.
Listen to this.
Perhaps because they're not always talking about the news, and because
just say it, Micah. It's because they're more commercial.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak too generally here.
It's not a bad thing. It's just not what we are.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
It's not. We're not commercial. I don't understand.
It's not who we are.
What does that mean? We're not commercial. You're very commercial. No, I mean, in that
they take advertising. Are they a nonprofit?
The commercial definition. Occupied with or engaged in commerce or work intended for commerce. Suitable, adequate, or prepared for commerce. They have commerce all over the place. It's called sponsored by, but there's all kinds of companies who want to be associated with their, I would say, commercial content. And they've been, the podcasts have had advertising from, I think, almost day one. That's not true. But once podcast advertising kind of started rolling, they were doing it. That is an elitist stance, which is bull crap. It's very commercial content.
Yeah, the real issue is they've isolated themselves into an ideological corner.
There it is.
and your content is scripted and not exciting. That's the issue. It doesn't have to do with commercial versus non-commercial, or whether you talk about the news or don't talk about the news. It's just sort of a boring ideological corner. I mean, even people who are hard partisan sort of people, they get tired of listening to their own side talk about stuff all the time. This model of sort of that hate ink model, the Taibbi expression of this where the media has been thrown to extreme ideological sides of the political spectrum. That is so, I think that is wearing down. I think it's past its prime, and it sucked a whole lot of the media into these weird little ideological spaces. And now they can't get, a lot of them can't get advertising because their audience became smaller and smaller and smaller. That audience became bored with it.
Maybe, but at the same time, everyone's going through this. They're not unique. I think, if anything, I just spilled my Coke all over everything. If anything, don't worry. It'll just be sticky. If anything, they are, it is ideological. They hate advertising. They hate being, the whole concept of being commercial. It just, we're better. It's a better than thing. And ads are down for everybody. I mean, you may not hear it from the podcast industrial complex advertising outlets, but it is. I mean, it's just a fact. It's down. It is just down, and it's down for them too. And now they're saying, "Well, we're hoity-toity. We're smart people, and we like to compensate our people fairly." And so, they're just commercial. No, it's down for everybody. And they have listeners. They clearly have listeners. Isn't that always the metric? It's like, if you're the top of the podcast list, then you have listeners, but there's just not enough ad money. They're blaming anything but the truth. They are on the media. On the media is the name of their show. They should just be saying, truthfully, advertising is down all over podcasting. There's issues with metrics. We had the iOS 16 apocalypse, the download apocalypse. We had all kinds of stuff going on, and they're just being dishonest here, and they're making it sound like they're victims of their incredible smartness. It's disgusting. This.
Well, you said they have listeners. They have downloads.
Well, that's
we don't know. We don't know how many listeners.
That's part of the download metrics problem. We have a metrics problem.
Well, because a lot of these NPR shows go way, way back in podcasting, and it could be that they just are sort of still have a wave of auto downloads that are historical in nature. And if there was sort of a great podcast reset that happened, and everybody's playlist got wiped, and they had to start over today and resubscribe to all their shows.
That's a good point. And they have shows that are daily and have a lot of, really regular on the media, I think, is three times a week. And maybe the adpocalypse hit them much harder than anybody else.
It's possible.
The download apocalypse. The download apocalypse.
Download apocalypse, yeah. In clip 7, they talk about a year of jubilee. Yeah, that's right, Nathan. The parasocial relationship. Now, this is a term I have no idea what it means, and I have not looked it up, but they talk about it in clip 7.
And there we go. I'm having a tough day today.
Hold Man, on. USB down.
Yeah, hold on a second. I don't know what to
some more nuts.
I don't know what to do about this. I mean, if this happens on Sunday's No Agenda, it's going to be an issue. There's some timeout that is just, it's messing with me. All right, clip 7. Hold on a second. Yeah, maybe don't spill Coke on it. Hey, thanks. Yeah, I'll jiggle the handle. Here we go.
I think what advertisers like about host read ads, what they like less about the kind of sponsorship ad where you have the voice actor whose name we don't know who reads the ad, is that advertisers, they want to piggyback on the trust that audiences feel with their favorite personalities, you know, what's often called the parasocial relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that we have not read those ads has limited the number of ads we can get. And so we're kind of drawing from a smaller and smaller pool of companies and organizations that want to pay us to have ads featured on our show.
What do you think they mean by parasocial relationship?
I'm going to have to look up the definition of that. Mm. Let's see. Parasocial. A parasocial means relating to a connection between a person and someone they don't know personally. Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. I've never heard that term.
I'm just going to call bull crap on this. Isn't it purely because host read ads have a much higher CPM than inserted ads? And as you pointed,
typically, yeah.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, they're going to be in the show itself. They're not going to be, just pre-rolls. It's going to be in the middle of the show, so in the middle of the content. That's always going to be a higher CPM. So what this sounds like is, well, we want, the advertiser said, we want this. And they're like, well, okay, and you'll get $21 CPM if you do it like this versus $3 or whatever the going rate is for an inserted ad. Sounds like that to me.
Or for the AI. I mean, that AI voice pre-roll can't be paying that much.
No, I mean, the pre-rolls just don't. If I can, from what I've heard from Todd, I think it's between, maybe $1 and $5 or something. It's not big.
So, why do advertisers like host read ads, and why are they willing to pay so much higher of a rate for them? They criticized earlier these quote other conversation shows that are, those shows. Let's think about Rogan, throw Call Her Daddy in there. Lex Friedman show. I mean, all these types of shows, it's not like that. A host read on that show is much different from a host read on what he calls a deeply edited scripted show, like on the media, because that parasocial relationship he's talking about exists in those other shows because there's a sense with the audience that they're hearing what the host really truly thinks.
And believe me, believe me, they're pissed about this because they're not going to get more money and they have to do the worst thing, which is give up their journalistic integrity.
Yes. And that's the thing is you can't, when you're listening to an edited show that's clearly edited and clearly scripted, there is no sense of connection there. You're not gonna be able to get the same type of sort of return on a host read from that type of show because there's a distance there between the audience, and that distance has always been part of NPR.
And by the way,
when you listen to NPR, you don't feel like you would ever be allowed in the room with these people.
Well, it's the lunchroom where they're recording, so I guess I am allowed in there. The commissary. I feel like
the NPR hosts typically are going to shrimp cocktail parties in Washington, D.C. And that's not, you know what I mean?
What are those shrimp deals with the chocolate fountain?
yeah, the fondue or whatever, But they do get into the ethics of it, the Chinese firewall. They get
here we go.
Which is not to say that this has been some like super straightforward decision. We are thinking through the ethics of this, and we're trying to internally figure out what our boundaries are, which I'd like to ask you about. I mean, what do you think should be like the basic rules for how we choose ads and how we read them?
Okay, stop the clip real quick. Here's another. See, this is scripted. He is not winging this and saying, "Hey, Brooke, I know I'm throwing this to you for the first time, and we've never discussed this before.
We're just
what do you think
talking.
The rule should be?
First of all, let's go back to the beginning of our analysis here. This is an emergency episode they decided to do themselves because they're not happy with what's going on here. And this is what it comes down to. This is really what it's about, this piece here.
Well, I think we need to steer away from our coverage areas so that we don't raise eyebrows or questions about conflicts of interest. That's pretty obvious. So no political ads, obviously, or ads from entities we're likely to cover. For instance, big media companies or the oil and tobacco industries, because we've covered their misinformation campaigns and we may still. Obviously, if you start reading ads, it could raise eyebrows and questions about conflicts of interest. I just want to be clear. The ads, whether or not we read them, aren't going to change the stories we take on or how we report them.
Yeah, look, we've always had a firewall between the editorial side of what we do and the business.
Firewall.
And this ad thing is not going to change that whatsoever.
Well, you're going to be pretty limited. Are they going to do pharma ads?
You stole it. You knew exactly where I was going. I guarantee that is the one thing they did not mention was pharma.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, just like I predicted that Stephen Bartlett would be the keynote speaker at Podcast Movement.
Yes.
I guarantee you within 6 months of them starting this, they will be running pharma ads. Or if not, if they don't run pharma ads, they are going to cover some pharma topic negatively to juice pharma into advertising with them to get them to shut up. I guarantee you.
Which is pretty much the okay. That's the modus operandi of television. Is what you're not advertising? Oh well, Ozempic seems to be killing people, but Zepbound. Oh, that's doing pretty good.
They have not had a pharma ad within 3 months, there will be some ad about Ozempic leading to more suicides,
so
or something like that.
So the problem that NPR, or maybe they've recognized it, maybe not, podcasting in general, you cannot create artificial scarcity because you're not on a 24-hour clock. They had it really good for 35 years, however long NPR has been around. And the minute you get to podcast advertising, there's no scarcity. It's like we have unlimited inventory for as many people as download or listen to the show. It's unlimited. So you can't create the scarcity. So the only scarcity there is within the show itself, which is limited to, in this case, 11 minutes. But let's say it's a half hour show. You can only have so many ads inside the show that the hosts themselves will read. And when podcast advertising first started, I was one of the pioneers of that because I'm not anti-advertising. I just thought we would be able to make the advertising industry smarter. Failed. Was, Code Bongino. It was per inquiry. And that's a different model. So you do the ad, and the success of the ad is rated based upon how many people use the code or use the link. And by the way, NPR, we have solutions for some of this. You can use chapters. You can use chapter links. There's all kinds of things that you can do.
Funding tag
for your most reliable source of income. There's a lot of things we've created that can help you solve this. Pull your head out of your ass. And by the way, this is not new. In 2017, this is a classic clip that we play over and over again when NPR was still just NPR, not even focusing on podcasting. It was already clear that this is an advertising outfit.
Okay, moving on to money. How are NPR's corporate underwriting revenues holding up in the recession? And what about foundation grants?
Two different stories. Underwriting is down. It's down for everybody. I mean, this is the area that is most down for us. Is in sponsorship, underwriting, advertising. Call it whatever you want.
Yeah, call it whatever you want.
Yeah,
that's what happens in a recession.
What year was that?
2017 is what I have on this clip. That may not be the original. I think it's 2017. But I think it's older than that. I'm not sure how long ago we played that. But yeah, that's what happens in a recession. It just happens. But and if you have too many people, then people have to go. And if you think that you can make the same amount of money on podcasts just because there's some bogus release about, then of course they're pissed about Kelsey, the Kelsey brothers. Where are they getting $100 million? You buy the smart list. It's just a bunch of nerds sitting around a table. The actors, the celebrities, and that's why they're getting paid. Your content is well worth money to me.
Oh, it's the Kelsey thing is it's even worse. It's not even nerds. It's jocks. Yeah, that's even worse.
Jocks and Swifties. So I'm sorry. Well, welcome to podcasting NPR, where you take a vow of poverty to make your programming. That's what it is. Try value for value. Try asking people. Say, hey, you know what? We put a lot of effort into this. Why don't you send this back whatever it was worth to you? Man, wouldn't it be great if they just tried it? I think they would do great at it. They really would. They really would.
I think Nathan Gathright in the boardroom is, I think he's spot on. It's a repeat of the fall of newspaper. He says it's a repeat of the fall of newspapers playing out again. The firewall between the newsroom and the necessities of the business model isn't sustainable.
Correct.
Yeah, I agree.
And
that firewall is not a firewall. It's just an impediment.
And almost all newspapers are losing money, except one that I know of is the New York Times, because people are buying a game. They're buying a subscription to Wordle, and I think they're also in that package getting the sports outfit that they bought, which is very specialized content that you can't get anywhere else, which is super firewalled. And they're not, they're just not buying it for news. So yeah, take a look at newspapers, NPR. You know, people that are doing news aren't making money. News is just what it is. Twitter is news. That's what people take for news. You want to be in-depth, you're going to have to ask people to support you. Because advertising is just not the model.
There's a humongous building. It's a huge, beautiful, modern building in downtown Birmingham. And it was the previous headquarters of the Birmingham News. And the Birmingham News built this building. I don't remember what year, but it was maybe 2010. And they built it right before the demise of newspapers.
What a great time to do that. Timing is everything, people.
They must have spent $50 million on this building. Yeah. And within 2 years, they were completely out of it. And now it's owned by an insurance company.
Oh, is it empty? Yes. Is anyone in it, or is it just empty?
It's owned by an insurance company now.
Wow. That's sad.
Yeah, but this feels the same way. It feels like what happened at the end, leading up to the pandemic, and then the pandemic just sort of polished everybody off with this sort of mass. We're going all in, all the chips into podcasting, and then rug pull.
And it's okay, but let's just admit it and move on. And by the way, I like her voice. I'm not a big fan of her just as a person. She seems very mean. I don't like her, but I don't mind. I'll listen to you with the crappy audio. That's okay if that's all that you can do. Ultimately, it's about the content. And yeah, you'd want it to sound good, but I listen to it for different reasons than may be intended, i.e., it's a hate listen. But I listen to it, and I'm a regular listener, and I don't think they've ever pitched me properly once to support them. Do you support them?
I've never heard it.
No,
I've never missed an episode of On the Media, and I've not missed an episode in probably 2 years, and I don't remember ever being asked for money.
Also, I want to support that show, and I don't want to support NPR in general.
Yes.
So give me those options. NPR.
I don't want any of my money going to Radiolab or whatever.
No, I'm with you there. All right. Shall we take a break and play a song and just ease into our weekend? Okay. This comes from the Value Verse. It's out there, and I love this track. Nice and easy. DJ
when I was
Yo.
Young.
Oh, yes, baby. How young were you?
I remember my mother singing this song. Let me try and sing it for you. to me. Oh yeah, I can't understand why your love is so true to me. Why your love is so wide. I haven't been the very best I could, but you still are so good. You wrote my name. You wrote my name in the book of life. It is your gift, the gift of Jesus Christ. Yeah. Who can comprehend?
That's right, C. Brooklyn 1112. A Jesus song.
That's right.
I get like a Destiny's Child.
Whitney Houston, Destiny's Child. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that song.
That's a good track. Yeah, I like that.
I mean, it sounds like real musicians, you know? It sounds like someone really blowing the horn there at the end. It was nice. Yeah, the value verse has something for everybody.
That's your 6 cents. What did you say that podcast listeners are worth? 6 cents per hour? Something like that?
6 cents per hour. Yes.
Yeah. So that was about what?
That's your six cents.
Like half a cent. That's,
yeah. I have not, unfortunately, because, you know, I have been trying to do a bit of vacationing with my wife. I have not listened to Pod News Weekly Review, but I do know that Russell from Australia is on the show this week, and he has started the Pod Fund. Have you been following this?
I vaguely understand what it is. Some sort of like pot where apps can, or podcast app developers can apply for some funding.
Well,
is that the way it works?
Yeah, I think so. It's okay. It's interesting. So, and I really love the sentiment behind it. Of course. It's like, well, without podcast apps, hosting companies have less of a future, I think is kind of what he's saying. And the idea is that they have some kind of key that they do. So he says he's taking 5% of his gross revenue, giving that to podcast apps that are based upon how many downloads they're seeing from each app. That's the key that creates the split of that fund. And in order to qualify, you can't be a corporate app, or at least not a, I don't know if it's just corporate app, but an app that also comes from a hosting company. and you have to have a minimum of 5 Podcasting 2.0 tags that you support.
Huh. Well, On the Media would qualify for that because they're not corporate, so they could get that.
No, it doesn't go to On the Media; it goes to the app developers.
Oh, okay, my bad. The app. I think that's. That's a pretty neat idea. I mean, if you have a relationship, I think the application type thing is kind of cool because you have a relationship with the person, with the developer, and you know that's because it's going to be honor system, and you would need to have that sort of relationship, though, that there's some trust built in there. That's a neat idea. I like it. I mean, I'm a fan of all these different ways of trying to make these different financial models work.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a weakness within podcasting. It's a weakness within all open source systems is how do you get some funding to the parts of the system that need it the most.
And I have to say, it's been the hosting companies that have supported us with the most value for Podcast Index, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Marco supported us for a long time, but I mean, other than him, the bulk of the funding, those big chunks that we need to pay the hosting bill every month, that has been hosting companies. So,
yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. And hosting is, if you do it right, if you do hosting correctly,
you can make money.
It's a good margin. It's got a good margin business, but as long as you don't
have any popular shows.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or offer video downloads. That seems to be a tough one.
Now video, let's talk about video for a second. Because
we've become the new media show. Can I be Rob? Rob, please?
Yeah. Yes. You pitch Yardstream or whatever that thing's called.
Yardstream.
Or what's it called?
StreamYard.
StreamYard.
Yardstream. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
The video stuff, because me and you are working on a side project and video, is a piece of things, is a piece of podcasting. But And Todd was talking about, I think last week he was saying that, he's going to take a risk and he's going to go all, sort of all in on video podcasting.
Mm.
The issue here, though, and this needs to be said, is the video, I don't think can work well as it's intended in the podcast concept without support for alternate enclosure. And because every podcast app is going to download the full video when you first hit play.
Right. Right.
The way it's going to work.
Yeah. Unless you have some signal there, this is video, this is alternate, this is how I want you to access it, HLS or whatever it is.
HLS. Yeah, we need the alternate enclosure with an HLS stream in order for video to really work in podcasting. Because nobody wants to download 15 gigabytes worth of podcast videos to their phone. So everybody's going to keep that on streaming, which is what it should be, because that saves the hosting companies the bandwidth. So these should all be stream first. Meet episodes, but in order to make that happen, you're going to have to do HLS because as soon as you hit play, what it's going to do is it's going to download a half a gig or a gigabyte video file before it ever begins to play it back. And so I just think that like as part of this whole thing, I'm a huge, hey, let's do it, man. Let's go all in on video over RSS, but we've got to make sure that we're doing it over HLS because otherwise it's going to hurt. And it's not going to be a good experience for the listener either. Because it's going to be that overcast thing where he switched to download, where you hit play and then you have to wait.
Yeah. I just find the whole thing wasteful. If people want to do video on YouTube or Rumble or where those are platforms that are understood. Yes, technically we can do it. We can also do PDFs in podcasts. You can do all kinds of things. I don't think the apps are conducive, which will bring me to another point in a minute. It's, I don't think video is killing audio. I think it's clear the demand for audio is huge. A lot of people will say that I watch Rogan, but they really just have the YouTube app and they may glance at it from time to time, but a lot of it's audio. They're just locking the screen and listening to it. I don't think it has a future in the podcasting. I'm not against it. Obviously put whatever you want in there. I just don't see why it matters. So look, NPR there, if they did video, they'd really be out of business.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, it's expensive. It's a pain in the butt. If you want to call, a YouTube show, a podcast, do whatever you want. I think there's something different that we need to consider. Are you done with video? Because I mean, we can talk about this until the cows come home.
Yeah, I'm done. That's just the point is the video. I don't think video can work without a streaming solution, which has already been built. It's there. It already works. PeerTube combined with Podverse. Go check it out. It works perfect.
Oh yeah, I mean, Podcast Guru does all. I'm surprised at all these things that pop up with video that people are just jamming video, like David Icke. He just does video pod. I don't even know how it works, but it just shows up and it works. And I wind up listening to it. I usually just close the screen and I don't care too much to watch. If I want to watch something, I'll watch something. But I think that's, you know, we've discussed this, Dave. That's just people chasing metrics. It's more about the metrics that YouTube can provide than it is about the video.
Right.
I mean, I think that's really, really what's going on there.
I was talking to a person the other day and they said his wife was a marketing person who's just joined a new company. And he said that she was telling him that her boss was like, had done this video, put it up on YouTube and was just saying like, you know, I've got over 1,000 views on this video. It's great. Hmm. And so she went in and started checking the stats and like almost every one of the views was some sort of bot. And it was like 1 or 2 seconds of playtime. That's.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, there's that. Yeah. There's that.
Yeah.
I was, I can't find the article. I think, Spurlock posted it and it might've been one of those Hollywood Reporter, articles about the top podcasters, the top celebrities. And in this case, the article was about about the apps, right? Was that Pod News? You know, their biggest complaints in podcasting and the top complaint was the apps. Did you see that?
No, I don't. I must've missed this article.
Maybe someone in the boardroom can find it for me. But I think, but there were a number of comments and I have to say it was Kara Swisher at the top. Another one of my favorites.
And so this wasn't just average listeners. This was people in podcasting.
People in podcasting. Yeah. And what they were kind of saying was the apps are confusing. There's no way to find what's trending. There's no recommendations, a whole bunch of things that, you know, we have semi solutions for. I just want, and it was enlightening because they see a podcast app as a platform. So, you know, YouTube is a platform and YouTube will recommend, but there's, you know, ways. I mean, just here's what I think has happened. From day one, because of the very nature of podcasting, it's been a very democratic display. So here, you know, it's like an inbox, you know, there's barely any priority or preference. And, you know, even though an app will have different features and have, you know, different, certainly for playback and for some organization. There's no personality in the app that is telling you what to listen to. There is no, I don't know of a single app that where you open up that app, it says, "Hey, Adam, here's what I think you should listen to today," or "because you listen to this," or "here's what's new." Apple has a little bit of that in their charts, but it's not really even in the app. It's more, you know, it's more on the podcast page. And I would, right. I would like the app developers just to consider, trying out some stuff that is non-democratic. Promote things that you, cause you, I think most app developers can probably see some of what their users are doing. If not, you probably should. I mean, I think you have every right to see what they're doing, not to sell it to advertisers, but to try and you know, maybe if someone's listening to a show that has a pod role, throw up those things the next time they open the app. Try not to be so democratic. Does this make any sense, what I'm saying here?
You mean, I think maybe what you're saying is that most of indie app developers in the podcast world are fans of open source and free and open software. And you're saying that sometimes that goes so far that it limits their ability, that limits their desire to do things that would maybe conflict with that.
Here it is. Hollywood Reporter. I found it.
Okay.
None of the apps are great, : top podcasters reveal biggest challenges. So these are the top podcasters. Say of it what you will. With more people tuning in than ever, Theo Von, Bill Simmons, Rachel Maddow, there you go, and more explain what's still holding the medium back. Rachel Maddow. It was actually Maddow, not Swisher. Interchangeable, as far as I'm concerned. None of the apps are great. We don't just need curation and charts. We need rational organization and
a meritocracy.
Yes, but it says, but how do you say meritocratic? Is it meritocratic?
You said it. Meritocratic. Yeah, meritocratic.
We need a meritocratic way for the best and most relevant shows and episodes to circulate efficiently. It's hard for me to understand why we're still saddled with such uniformly clunky, unintuitive user interfaces at this point. This is a very good point. And even though it's coming from Rachel Maddow, I think that point is well made. We've always gotten into a democratic way of displaying podcasts and kind of a search and find where, you know, I think it's okay to put personality into your app and say, I mean, by the way, why wouldn't you do an app that highlights left-leaning political podcasts, or conversely, right-leaning political podcasts, or show business, or sports, and call it that? Is that really bad? I think it adds a tremendous amount of value, because you can't please all the people all of the time. And just the pure nature, like you said, where we come from, in the open source, kumbaya, everyone's equal, I think it's been hurting the experience that app developers can create for their users.
Yeah, I mean, you can start with, I think the problem might be, well, first of all, it's easy to, criticism is easy, solutions are hard.
Of course.
And, you know, and so I understand, it's a valid criticism that she says that, you know, these interfaces are clunky and that kind of thing. That you're right, that is valid. At the same time, trying to fit relevant information of that type onto a small device and present it in a way that makes sense, that doesn't look jumbled and weird and disconnected, that is a hard problem. And I think that's part of the issue there on the developer side. The other part is the everybody getting the same shake, like you said, is there, you know, there shouldn't be some sort of like hierarchy you don't want to highlight. But I think, you know, starting with something like Pod Roll and your own internal metrics, I mean, we do that. I mean, we do a form of that on the index. I wish it was even more. I wish it was even like more intense of taking sort of a survey of all of the episodes being requested and then assigning scores to the podcast based on episode request volume. And that's how our own internal search ranking system works. So, you know, we take a list of known podcast apps that we trust, and then we see how many times they've asked for data about a particular podcast. And the more times they ask, the higher the rank.
Some other examples. Fountain is hands down the value for value when it comes to streaming sats and Lightning payments. Is hands down the app that everybody who understands what that is uses. They have differentiated themselves even further by integrating Noster. So they're going after a very particular audience that they believe will grow. Of course, it's also alienated people. A lot of people are like, I'm not interested in that. So, which is good and bad. Bad, they may lose some people who are just not interested in seeing a Noster timeline. They may gain a multiple of that by people who are interested. And the concept of boosting and zapping and all of this stuff. So that's a big differentiator. Other examples are, okay, so lnbeats.com. LN Beats is very, very specific. It's for music. Mm-hmm. Wavelake app, it's for music. I think there are many, you could do a value for value donation app where you, first of all, you find all of the shows that have a funding tag, and maybe you go into all the NPR shows and find their link to their funding page and add that in. I mean, I'm just saying there's so many different things that apps could do individually that may attract not necessarily the wide audience, but a smaller audience. Remember, my whole thing this year is the future of media is small. That you can find a smaller audience that would appreciate that and would gladly pay you to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think, the smaller you get, the more rationale there is for being supported by that niche you serve, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah, you should. Thank you. That's exactly right. It is the paradox. And so, I think both Podverse and Fountain started, the development teams initially wanted to make clipping and sharing of podcasts easier. And I think both of them moved away from that. Podverse has, and I just evaluate by what people send me. So if someone shares a clip with me from a podcast, it's almost always Podverse. It used to be Overcast. That has changed. Now it's Podverse. For whatever Podverse is doing, people like that sharing mechanism. I'm not telling anyone what to do. I'm just saying I think there's opportunities, and we're hearing it from some of the biggest names in podcasting are saying, help us organize this differently. Rachel Maddow has her own ideas of what that means. I think what she really means is make sure I'm on the homepage every single time. You know, I think there's just so much opportunity. I'm not a developer, so it's very, very easy for me to talk about this in this way. But I'm just here to help identify that there are the differentiator between podcast apps. I think it's time. You know, yes, people are always going to use certain apps for certain playback functions, certain, you know, the way the silent, I hear this all the time, the way the silent skipping works, the way the high speed generation sounds. That's a big category. But I just think there's so many other things that are possible that you can draw in a smaller audience that will be much more likely to support your app when you ask them to, because of the work that you've done into highlighting that particular feature instead of everyone trying to be all things to everybody.
But I think you're going to see it with true fans too, where, because Sam is going all in on Activity Pub.
Yeah.
Similar to the way that Fountain has done with Noster. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to see, you're going to see true fans links and true fans based postings. You're going to see them start to pop up all over the Fediverse. And when that happens, it's the app itself is going to gain more traction.
Yes, I completely agree.
It's touching a specific audience.
I completely agree.
You know, which. I think you're right. I mean, I never really thought about it that way, but it makes sense. Yeah.
Well, it was that article. You know, let me see what else there was, because there were some other things that were said. Like, okay, you know, the biggest challenge is marketing, particularly in the news sphere, says Ben Shapiro. So maybe, you know, maybe that's just a different view. Look at the top news apps. I mean, everyone has categories, but try not to do all categories. Try to focus on something.
Well, I mean, maybe we can help in this way. Like, maybe we can publish more data that helps this even more. Like, you know, we have about 4,600 podcasts being followed through the podcast Activity Pub bridge. Maybe I can publish the list of all those shows. And so that way,
that's a good idea.
You know that these shows are being listened to by people who are also on the Fediverse and probably have, and that tells you, okay, well, here's an audience. Here's a list of shows that are clearly relevant to people in ActivityPub. And so therefore, I mean, like, then you can do something with that information.
And I don't want to put this under the general category of discoverability, because that's different. This is personality. This is personality of an app that draws people to this app. And other people will recommend that. Oh, you know, it's like, I only like news shows. And so, you know, this app recommends that to me and it does this and it has these highlighted and whatever it is. And as I said, you know, like, I think your example of ActivityPub, of the Fediverse, is spot on for true fans. I think you're right. And so you have Fountain clearly tapped into Noster, and I hope it grows. I hope it grows really, really big. And I think it can, although I was against it initially, now I'm thinking that's a great idea. Focus on that.
Well, aside from the technology, I mean, the technology itself argument, that's different. But like from Fountain's perspective, they're heavily Bitcoin focused on that. They know that they have a strong Bitcoin focused audience. So why would they not do the Noster thing? You know what I mean? Like, that's where a lot of their audience is. So it makes sense.
That's what I'm saying. And what they did is they took the risk of pissing off people, which they did. And I know that they did, and they know it. For the upside of, well, we're going to give this core audience who already understand Bitcoin and already understand value for value and boosting, because they are by far the biggest with the most transactions, not always the highest amount, but certainly the by volume, and add to that audience that already understands it and wants more of it. That's a bold decision. It's not necessarily for me. But it's a bold decision. It's good. I mean, I think that's really good.
And I think he knows that over time he'll just smooth out those initial rough edges and make it where, I mean, like, I don't think anything's really on the longer timescale going to hurt.
Well, it's okay. The future of media is small. Focus on an audience that you can reach and completely satisfy. You can't be. I mean, why do people buy different radios? Why do people buy different television sets? You know, there's all kinds of, I like this because it has Netflix built into it. I like this because it does that. This has 3D. I can put my 3D goggles on. It switches automatically. You know, there's all kinds of things. And that differentiation, it just really hit me when I saw this Hollywood Reporter, and particularly from Rachel Maddow, who I really am not a fan of. But like, you know, she's saying something very interesting here. That's a powerful statement. It's like, It seems clunky. It doesn't fit to my worldview or what I understand of curation or promotion. And you know, by the way, you could build quite a business out of, it seems to be like a dirty word, and I'm just unlike, NPR, I'm commercial. That seems like a dirty word to say, well, you know what? You can buy a spot on the homepage of my app to promote your podcast. That's like, it's like not done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 That's.
My dog, your dog. Really, I can hear your dog. Yeah. Your dog is not happy.
Yeah. No, I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with like sponsored, you know, placement, because if somebody cares enough to spend some money to put that in, you know, that to promote that into in an app that I respect, I'm okay with that. I'm fine with it. I mean, it's all right.
You know, when
it's not the end of the world.
There was such an opportunity. I know we talked about it when Joe Rogan came back on onto Open RSS Podcasting. As far as I know, not a single podcast app went, hey, we've got Joe Rogan back. Click here.
Seems
like an obvious one. You know, it's like, hey, you can get Joe Rogan here now. You don't need Spotify. Come to us.
That's such a good point.
And you can do that from, hey, you know, for all of these things. There's so much that can be done with this content, and the podcasters would endear you. Oh, wait a minute. You're promoting my show? I mean, what is one of the top things? How do I game Apple? How do I get, you got to have this many new subscribers and this many 5-star reviews. Make it just something you do. Doesn't have to be a democracy.
I've seen this for a long, I've said this for a long time that, you know, writing a podcast app is incredibly difficult.
No kidding.
When you, writing an RSS feed reader is considered sort of like a bootstrap starter app.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so not true, because to do it well and to do a podcast app well takes years and years of commitment. It is not, it is so not easy. And like I've got mad respect for every single independent podcast app developer that exists. And like to be able to take all this data and plug it into this tiny little interface and do it in a way that doesn't feel just like a complete garbage dump.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that just takes talent. And we all know that user interface design is literally the hardest thing in the world to do.
Well, so how about focus?
It's maddeningly difficult.
So once you have your basic interface design, and all podcast apps are like email, here's your list, and here's your inbox, and here's the new stuff, and you can organize it kind of like an email. That's RSS readers the same way. But people choose different email clients for different reasons. Why is there so many people using ProtonMail? Because they provide reasonably simple to use encryption. And there's a feeling there of, okay, my email is secure. What do people like about Gmail? Is Gmail so incredibly great? Well, some people like it because it's unlimited storage, which is not really true, depending on how much you use. I like the HJKL navigation of it. It's all these different features that are very specific to specific email clients, and that's why people use them. A lot of people like Outlook. Why? Because it integrates with Microsoft Office. You know, these are all the types of things that I think it's well overdue time for podcast app developers to at least start thinking about, what can I do? What is unique to me? What is unique in my skill set that I can do that will maybe not be the most general app for everybody to use, but will attract this audience, and that I can bring this? Because once someone who likes encryption sees ProtonMail, they tell someone else, hey, you should use ProtonMail.
Yeah. What you're saying is that app developers should not be afraid of having an opinion.
Precisely. And it's the same hurdle as asking for money in value for value. It's a hurdle you got to get over, and most people don't really want to do it because it feels dirty. It doesn't feel right for some reason. But we're going to do it right now by asking people to support us with some money.
Let's do it.
So I hope that came across as what I wanted to communicate. Because
I think so.
Because I really see a future for everybody. And I would use different apps for different things. I already do. I already use, if I want to share something, I typically will use Podverse. Fountain has their own way, their own sharing thing, which is not particularly something I like with the wheel. But, it's like there's audiences for all this stuff. And there's a lot of audiences. And, we don't need to compete with Apple. Apple, in fact, is at a disadvantage. We know that we can do, they're really trying to be all things to all people. And they're slow. They can't develop things, and they have to be all things to all people. And you can have a smaller, very dedicated, and I believe supporting user base, which doesn't have to be very big. Think about it. If you had, 1,000 users and they're all supporting you with, $1 a month, it starts to get more interesting probably than what most are getting now. Just a thought.
Yeah.
So looking at the boost that came in during the show, there's guess who's at the top? Sam Sethi.
Sam.
And the good news is true fans can now federate comments. Listen.
Oh, did he get it working?
I guess so. Listen stats and more to all ActivityPub clients. So there you go.
Nice.
Sam is finding his niche. You want to say something?
I need to check and make sure that it's working, because he said he was having trouble the other day getting it to federate out. Wonder if he's posted. I don't see him posting anything else about it. Here's the first. Oh, okay. Wait, let's check this out.
Is it working?
Here's the first ever comment from true fans in the Podcast 2.0 show published by ActivityPub. Oh, yep. I see it.
Nice.
Got it.
Nice.
Boom.
Excellent.
Very
excellent.
Nice.
Excellent. So yeah, that should definitely be on the list for your ever growing list, is getting some of those ActivityPub stats out. That's cool. I like that. I like that idea.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. I actually was coding in the, I actually spent quite a bit of time coding, last night in the podcast index ActivityPub bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to do some troubleshooting, putting in some new stuff, trying to make that thing more stable. So I'm in that code base right now.
Awesome. 3333 from Chad F. He says, I like Russell's pod fund idea. I've been wanting something like this for a while. Well, your request has been granted. Dreb Scott 4567. Don't you know video killed the radio star? Kidding, LOL. Side note, I'm currently publishing my wife's podcast in two separate feeds. One is for audio with an alternate enclosure for video, and the other for video with alternate enclosure for audio. Well, that's interesting. I guess that's necessary still to do it that way.
You know what I would love?
Mm-hmm.
Is I would love if Apple Podcasts app would support HLS through an alternate enclosure tag, and then they could, and then they streamed the Apple keynote, the Apple live events
into their own podcast app. Yes. Yes.
Because they publish that video over HLS.
They do.
And they currently have no way to watch their own live events on their own devices without just going into Safari and opening up a web page. They should do it within their podcast app. And everybody has a feed, a silent feed of just the Apple live event feed or something like that. And it pops up in the podcast app. And there you go.
33.
Oops. That's a magic number. So that's a helipad being triggered by Darren O'Neill. With 33,333 sats. That has, you got to hit the big number for that. And Darren says, it's all rock and roll to me. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Darren. 1111 from Randall Black and John's Creek Studios. Good job thinking about saving the bandwidth for listener/user and server demand for the hosting providers. Go podcasting. 1234 from Dreb Scott. He says, keep alive. Yes, I need to keep alive for my USB. I actually switched the USB port. So now I'm on the main USB port, so I don't have a pre-fader listening capability. But at least it's up and running. Salt to Crayon 111 from Upbeats got together in the lunchroom for a quickie. Dave Jones, they weren't in the pipe for that audio quality, he says. Yeah, that's true.
No, 5x5.
That's right. Boobery with 6666 going to be running lights tonight for Ace Frehley. Oh, wow. Fingers crossed. Ooh, there's time before the show to onboard him with a note and give a quick rundown of MusicSideProject.com. Well, yeah, I'm going to definitely have my fingers crossed for that, brother. That'll be a good one.
Yes, please.
1234 from Dreb Scott. Show title, Dude, Where's My Show? Actually, I kind of like Lunchroom Quickie is the one I'm going with. side note, Kiwi... IRC.com is down, so I can't get into the boardroom at work. Oh, that's too bad. Didn't realize that. The 777 from Dreb Scott, keeping the Roadcaster alive. Unfortunately, that all comes in on a different interface, but I appreciate it, brother. Another 1111 from Salty Crayon. Howdy, boardroom. Got a dumb question for you all. There's no such thing. On the stats page of podcastindex.org, it says that there's 4,258,428 podcasts in the index. On the value for value tab, it says only 21,126 are V for V enabled. Does this mean that there is 4,236,231 that don't even enable them for V for V? When I tell people about V for V and the index, I want to have my info correct. Got to be 5x5. Go podcasting. Yeah, that's correct.
That's right.
That's so there's technically anybody can in the index, anybody can enable themselves through podcasterwallet.com or one of our many partner APIs. But that number is just index. That's not feeds even. That's indexes. That's index count, right?
Yeah.
So if we have the shim in place. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And another, let's see, that was 1,000 from Chad F., who was actually listening pre-stream. Thank you very much, Chad F. That's our Boosters Live during this vacation episode. Dave, what do you have on the PayPals and the monthlies and other boosts?
Sam says, if you reply to a truefans.social posting, it doesn't go anywhere currently, but they're going to make that visible in True Fans itself if you somebody replies from the Fediverse. Just a live update from Sam.
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
We got some PayPals. We got the Blueberry Team, $300.
Whoa, hello, Blueberry Paula, Team.
Shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Thank you very much. There it is. Proof is in the pudding, keeping us alive.
Says go podcasting from the Blueberry Team. Hold the line.
Yes, we will hold the line. Holding the line.
We got another. We got another PayPal from Oscar Mary. $200.
Bam.
Podcasting.
Oops. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Check your CO2. CO2 might be too high. I don't even start the show until CO2 hits 1,000.
I was telling Dvorak about that story about what's that guy Bartlett, the Diary of a CEO, and that when CO2 monitor hits 1,000, then he stops the interview. And you know what Dvorak's response was? Dude, open a window.
This is true.
Yes, like, this is true. That's a good one. Yeah, makes total sense.
Yeah, Occam's razor. Yeah. Uh-huh. Do the simple thing. We got some boostergrams. We got, wait. You know what? We had a last minute donation. A one-off $10 from C Brooklyn 112. Go podcasting.
All right, brother.
Boost!
Thank you very much.
I almost missed it. Man, that was a close one. Mere Mortals, Kyron, Satchel Richards 1111. Through Fountain, he says, enjoy Mexico, Adam. Some of the most beautiful and diverse landscapes all jumbled into one country. Watch out for the police, though.
It is indeed. It is indeed. It is beautiful here. Too bad about all the cartels.
I heard Kyron's police story. If you've never heard it,
He has a Mexican police story?
It's pretty nuts. Oh, yeah. Yes, it involved prison time. Yes. Chris Lass over from Jupiter Broadcasting Network, 20,000 sats through Fountain. He says, wow. Killer value to the community this week and taking time to talk patiently with Rob at Lipson. Good work. Really been enjoying the board meetings recently. Happy belated birthday, Podfather.
Oh, thank you very much, brother. Appreciate it.
See, we got Gene Bean, 2222, Row of Ducks there, Cast-O-Matic. He says, for location, I hope it utilizes latitude and longitude so that it can be easily correlated to any mapping tool.
Well, it's an option, isn't it? Hasn't that always been an option?
Mm-hmm.
Long and last?
Yeah. Straight up.
Yep,
straight up. Sir Brian of London, 11948 through Cast-O-Matic. He says, I have to boost at the mention of tiles.podping.org.
Yeah.
It does link to episodes.fm already for most, and it will link for all when it is upgraded to handle encoded URLs instead of iTunes IDs. Yes, we are all waiting with bated breath.
We can't wait. We can't wait to use episodes.fm for everything. Yeah, tiles.podping.org is pretty cool to look at.
Gene Bean, 2222, coming in again. He says, preach it, Brother Dave. General comment, not about a specific thing.
Just in general. Good one. Yeah.
Preach. In Nuebi. Enueby. 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 I don't know. 20,000 sats through Fountain. He says, can you make a suggestion of a good podcast hosting company? HomePod, Lipson, Blueberry? Who appears to be supporting the most 2.0 features? Who has best value split setup in terms of ease? Love the show. Keep blazing new trails.
Well, if you go to podcastapps.com, I believe you can set filters there. So you can say, I want to have hosting companies and what they support. And that's a good way to really see who provides what.
Yep. Choose the filters of the tags you want supported and have a shot. Let's see. We got Mike Dell. Oh, I know Mike.
I've heard of him.
1701. Yeah, 1701. That's the Star Trek boost through Fountain. He says, finally got my wallet refilled. Well, good for you, Mike.
What is this? How is 1701 a Star Trek boost? I'm not familiar with the numerology of Star Trek.
The designation number of the Enterprise is NCC 1701D.
Oh, of course. Of course. I should have known. Yep. Got it.
Comic strip blogger, the Delimiter, 27,000 sats. He says, through Fountain. He says, howdy, biz bros, Dave and Adam. We're approaching an era of total unemployment for humans.
Okay. Sounds like another AI boost.
We're already 2 years into the Gen AI with LLM revolution. And in just 2 more years, the humanoid robot revolution will begin, soon to be followed by AGI. The only job that might remain for us humans will be content creation. With that in mind, I recommend checking out the MP3 podcast and 4K YouTube videos of Bandrew Says Podcast equals BSP Podcast. It covers topics relevant to content creators. Yo, CSP.
Well, that means we're good to go, Dave. We have employment for the rest of our lives, for as long as we may be here.
We got some monthlies. We got Chad Farrow, $20.22. Thank you, Chad F. Kevin Bay, $5. Thank you, Kevin. Cameron Rose, $25. Pod Page, that's Brendan over there in the gang. Yes. So he's $25.
Who have been they've been advertising on Pod News all week. Pod Page, have you heard
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's good.
Mark Graham, $1. New Media, $1. Thank you guys. Randall Black, $5. Joseph Morocco, $5. And Emilio Cano Molina, $4.
Well, thank you all very much for returning value for the value that we provide with podcastindex.org, the work that goes into that, the board meeting. We are tickled pink and would ask everybody to consider supporting us. You can go to podcastindex.org down at the bottom of that page, past all the funky stuff and the tiles and the carousel. There's a red donation button. You can send us your fun fiat coupons through PayPal, or of course, use a modern podcast app to boost us. And that will typically get read on the show. Which also, if you put a note in your PayPal, we'll read that as well. Thank you all for supporting the entire project known as podcastindex.org and podcasting 2.0. And a special announcement, if you are listening live right now, yes, special announcement, live on the stream next, after we disconnect, will be a live session from Øystein Berge.
No.
You remember we played some of his music on the last show?
Yeah. Now, it is. Okay, yes. I got him confused with, who's the guy that does all the AI stuff? We figured out later his music was all AI.
Oh, Richard Grease. Richard Grease.
That's it, Richard Grease.
No. Okay, so, Øystein is, let me see, where's his, let me see. I'll give you a little preview of some of his musical stylings, if you recall. It still cracks me up. This is his Mosquito Mystery track.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. He's Dutch, right? He's the Dutch guy.
I think he lives in Holland, but I believe he's Danish. I think.
Danish, okay.
Yeah, So make sure you listen for that. I'm definitely, as I'm wrapping up and getting ready to head down to the pool, I'm definitely going to be listening to that. He's an interesting fellow. Interesting fellow. All right, Brother Dave, thank you so much. Another week in the can. What are you doing this weekend?
My daughter has she's got a concert tonight. And so we're going to go watch her play. Yeah, she's playing guitar in her band.
Oh, nice.
And yeah.
You want to mention the venue where people can go and check her out?
At the Firehouse in downtown Birmingham.
All right. Excellent. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. And is she streaming that live like she should be?
Negative. No streaming live.
No live stream. All right, Boardroom.
One day we will get that working.
Yeah, you bet. Boardroom, thank you very much for being here. As always, we will return next week on the Friday, bringing you everything that's happening in podcasting right here in the weekly board meeting for Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Yeah, it is big.